Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Parshat HaShavua Shir for Parshat Chaye Sarah. Parshat Chaye Sarah is almost the dip and the calm in the middle of Sefer Bereshit. You know, we have all the excitement of creation in Bereshit, and then we have all the excitement of the flood and Noah, Abraham and Sarah, the destruction of stone, the Akedah. And then Parshat Chaye Sarah is a lengthy Parsha, which features, I don't know, at most two topics, the death of Sarah and Yitzchak's marriage to Rivka. But even though it's a long Parsha with only two topics, I think there's something new that we can learn. And I want to ask a question together that we can hopefully talk about. I'm hoping that we can have an interactive class tonight as we learn Parshat Chaye Sarah together. And we want to thank Torah in Motion for hosting this class and thank everybody for coming out. Okay. Without any further ado, here's the question that I'd like us to talk about this evening. And that is one pasuk in Parshat Chaye Sarah, the pasuk that ends the first aliyah of Chaye Sarah. I'm going to share my screen. Hopefully you can all see this now. This is the end of the first aliyah of Chaye Sarah. So just to review a little bit of the background story, Sarah died. It's very sad, very tragic. Abraham needs to find a place for her to be buried. He goes to the Hittites, the Hittim. He says he wants to bury Sarah. And we get ready to bury her. And here is the verse that ends the first Aliyah. If you're following along in your Chumash, it's chapter 22, I think. Chapter 23, the last pasuk, highlighted on your screen. Vayishma Avraham el Ephron. Abraham agreed to what Ephron, the older of the owner of the burial plot, insisted on. Vayishkol Avraham el Ephron et hakesef asher diber ba'osnei b'nei chet. Avraham pays out the money that he promised. Arba me'ot shekel kesef ober la'socher. 400 shekel. Which is a lot of money in that time. We're talking $50,000 at least for a burial plot. He's paying out over la socher in very high quality currency. The English in front of you says currency. Some say it shouldn't be translated as currency because they didn't necessarily have currency then. It could have been just a solid silver because minted currency happens a little bit later. Okay, but here's the question I want to pose to all of you. Why is that the pasuk that ends the first aliyah of the parsha? So we have a whole parsha. It's going to have a lot of different topics. And the first person who is called to the Torah reads up until that pasuk. So anyone have any thoughts? Why does that pasuk of all pasuks chosen to be the one that ends the first aliyah? Ruth, I see your mouth moving, but you're on mute. So if you want to share, you'll have to unmute yourself.
It is the first business deal that is really recorded.
Okay, so I'm going to take notes in the chat of all the different suggestions that we have. So the first suggestion that we have here is that it is a momentous moment. First business deal in history. So we don't in the Chumash we don't have buying and selling before this point. So we want it to be momentous. That's a possible answer. I thank Chaim for sharing that answer with us. If that's true, it sounds like a post punchline to a joke. You know, Jews are successful in business, and somebody asks, why is it that Jews are successful in business? And they answered that from the time we're children, the Torah highlights this very important business deal. But I mean, that's not central to the Torah. Why are we ending the Aliyah with a business deal? Like, that's the thing that we wanted to end with, of all things.
Well, obviously you don't want to talk about just the mundane division of so many psukim into so many aliyot. I understand that. So I have nothing else to say.
Right. So what I think Ruth is saying is she's anticipating an answer that somebody just divided the parsha into seven slices and ended there. But we're not going to give that answer either. I'll put that in the chat dutifully because we're keeping track of all the answers. We're not going to say that this ends the Aliyah because we just wanted to have 1/7 of the parsha, because that's not particularly inspirational. And that's not something to excite us. So we need something a little bit better than 1/7 of the parsha. And business deal is a possibility, but as Jews, we're looking for something more inspirational than just, that's a business deal. I see iPad Toronto with a raised hand. Please go ahead.
It teaches us a certain way of acting. Abraham has to deal with burying his wife and all that mundane stuff before he cries for her. It says he goes to Lifkotav, whatever the other word is, but the order is interesting. You don't break down and just cry into a puddle. It teaches us a course of action, how we're supposed to react to things, and dealing with the mundane helps focus us away from our grief. So it's a lesson in grief counseling.
So I agree with Mr. iPad Toronto. I guess I should have asked you your name. I don't want to call you iPad Toronto the whole time. Okay, we'll call you iPad Toronto. So I agree with iPad Toronto that the story is so fascinating that here Abraham loses his beloved wife, Sarah, who they had been married for decades, and he immediately takes care of the needs of her burial. And as the Ramban notes at the start of the Parsha, Abraham is coming back from Akedat Yitzhak. He's in Be'er Sheva. He's got to travel all the way from Be'er Sheva to Hebron. But what's interesting is that this Pasuk does not mention Sarah being buried. And that's what's so fascinating about this Pasuk being chosen. When you look at it this way, as it appears in your screen, divided into the seven aliyot, it looks like the end of a story. Because here we have Avraham paying the money, and that's the end of the aliyah, and end of the story. But what's amazing is, if you were looking at this not from the perspective of aliyot, but just from the perspective of the chapters, you would notice something different. We're going to switch views here to the view in Sepharia. What's interesting to notice is that when you look at the chapter division, this isn't the end of the story. See, the story ends a few verses later in Pasuk Kaf when they actually have the burial. The Aliyah ends here in Pasuk 16. Then in 17, the sale is repeated. Then in 19, we have the burial. And then in 20, we have a summary of what is happening. So iPad Toronto, I agree with you that this is such a momentous story. But if you're right, then the Aliyah should end four verses later, at the end of the story, in verse 20.
Could the reason for the end here be a word play with the word over, stressing the fact that though an agreement has been made, Abraham is still the Ivri, standing on the opposite side of Hebron?
That's interesting. So Abraham is called the Ivri, You know, that he comes from Abraham Nahar. He stands on the other side. And as Rashi notes in a number of places, the whole world has one value system and Abraham has a different value system. So that word over is interesting that it appears in this aliyah. But we still got to figure something out. And now, in order to answer this question, Noreen, I see you wrote something in the chat. Noreen, let me read what you wrote here in the chat. First ownership in the land, they have made it. Okay, so I'm going to put that down here as answer three, which is first foothold in the land of Israel. And that's saying not that we want to, it's not that we want to stress the business dealing, because why would that be something important to stress? But we want to stress the fact that Avram was promised the land in Parshat Lech Lecha, and it's been three parshiot that he's been traveling the land. He hasn't acquired it yet, and this is the first acquirement of the land. This reminds me of the joke, which I'm sure some of you have heard before. The Torah knew that there are times that our enemies will claim that we have no right to Israel. So the Torah, in three occasions, highlights that the Jewish people purchased parts of the land of Israel so that everyone will know that it's ours and no one will argue. So Avram purchased one portion of the land, and everyone will agree it's ours and no one will argue about it. And then Yaakov purchased a section of the land, and everyone will agree it's ours and no one will argue about it. And then David HaMelech, King David, purchased a portion of the land. And what are those three parts of land that everyone is going to agree that they're ours and no one will argue about it? Marat HaMachpelah in this week's parsha, which people say isn't ours. Shechem in
And
a few weeks.
Yerushalayim, and
And
Yerushalayim.
Har Bayit, the Temple
Wow.
Mount. So, you know, go figure, right? So anyway, so that's a good suggestion, which Noreen is mentioning. But I'll say to Noreen the same thing that I mentioned to iPad Toronto, which is, if you look carefully, if you wanted to stress acquisition of Israel, you'd probably want to read one more verse. You see, in verse 17, we actually have the sale being finalized. Vayakam Sdeh Ephron, and the field of Ephron, Vayakam, which might be a word for a finalized business deal. Rashi in one place suggests that maybe it means it reached higher sanctity because it was acquired for a religious purpose. Vayakam Sdeh Ephron, it became his. Ashelif Nimamret, Hasadeh, the field, Hamearasherbo, and the cave, and all the trees, so it could be that the reason why we want to end the Aliyah here is to stress our acquisition of Israel, but then maybe it should have gone one pasuk more. So it's a good answer, but we're going to hopefully find another one, although that might end up being our best answer of tonight. Okay, now in order to give everybody a more of a 1,000-foot view about what's going on here, I thought that we would look a little bit more at the way the Parsha appears in the Torah. So I'm going to share the screen again, and this time we're going to look at a different tab. And I want to show you, in the Torah, the division of the text is different than the way it's read. In the Torah, we have these little paragraph symbols, which break text up into different sections. In Parshat Chayei Sarah, the last section in the Torah scroll, which looks something like this. It's its own paragraph. If anyone can look at the first line, the last paragraph of the parsha is its own self-contained unit, the story of Yishmael, the son of Abraham. And we have another paragraph. It's a little bit longer towards the end of the parsha. This whole paragraph here. This paragraph is also its own self-contained paragraph. And this paragraph is the death of Abraham. Okay. Now, before that, you have a really long paragraph. Notice on my screen, this is all one paragraph. I'm going to keep scrolling, keep scrolling. Boy, this paragraph is huge. Oh, it's a never-ending paragraph. Okay, the entirety of chapter 24, 67 verses, is one paragraph in the Torah. And then the sale of the and the sale of the field is its own paragraph in the Torah. Yet the Aliyah ends right over here, not at the end of the paragraph, which is a little bit later. So this is our problem we have to solve tonight. Why does the Aliyah end where it ends? And so far we have some suggestions, but we're looking for a better answer. So I want to direct your attention to the other Aliyos in the Parsha. So let's first solve the riddle why the 7th, 6th, 5th, 4th, 3rd, 2nd Aliyos end where they do. And then we're going to come back to the first Aliyah. So we're going to again share the screen. But now I'm going to show you the 7th Aliyah. Why is this the 7th Aliyah? You can see it all on screen. Well, it's all one self-contained unit. It's a little short unit, 7 verses long, story of Yishmael. It's its own section. It's its own paragraph of the Torah. So it's its own Aliyah. That sounds great. What about the 6th Aliyah? Can anyone tell why this is the 6th Aliyah?
It's also a contained unit. It's just a... it's mopping up Avram of what happens after the Akedah. Avram gets married, has more kids, and he dies.
Exactly, Ruth. 100%. This is its own
Aliyah.
It is
before the 7th, and it is before the 7th. It must be the 6th.
Yeah, must be the 6th. It's its own self-contained unit of what happens to Avraham. Now, Aliyah 5 is the end of Yitzchak marrying Rivka, the end of that story. Look at the way the 5th Aliyah ends. Well, that's a great way to end Aliyah. If you were making a Hollywood movie, this would be the last scene before the credits roll. Vayivya Yitzchak ha'ol ha'sarah imo. Yitzchak, has that romantic meeting with Rivka. Finally, they have come together. Vayikach et Rivka v'atilo l'isha v'yaveha. They marry. Maybe they have a romantic kiss. And he feels consoled for the loss of his mother. That also is the end of a story. So the 5th, 6th, and 7th Aliyot in this week's Parsha, it's easy to understand why they end where they do, because they end stories. What about the 4th Aliyah? This is a little bit more interesting. Why do you think the 4th Aliyah ends here? Well, let me show you how the 3rd Aliyah ends, and that may help you understand where the 4th Aliyah ends. Notice anything? 3rd Aliyah and 4th Aliyah?
The handling begins, the handling ends. It's the bargaining that begins in the 3rd Aliyah.
Here, look carefully. Look at the last word of the 4th Aliyah.
Oh, the last word.
And the last word of the 3rd Aliyah. Same last word. Both of those Aliyot end with the name of Hashem. Now, this is not an accidental thing. In the book of Bereshit, Hashem's name ends a pasuk, and about half of the times that Hashem's name ends a pasuk, we specifically choose to end the aliyah there with Hashem's name. You might know a few of them. Next week we're going to have Ata Ata Baruch Hashem. We have these Vayikor Arza Vayishtachu Hashem. They bow down to Hashem. In Parshas, I think it was Lech Lecha, we had Vayikra Sham Avraham B'Shem Hashem. We like ending Aliyos with Hashem's name. It's very uplifting. It's very inspirational. It's somewhat awe-inspiring. By the way, is there anybody here of German descent or who has spent time in a German synagogue? Ruth, you're shaking your head.
Yes.
Do you know?
Yes, I know what they do. They ended on an up note. La-da-na-ai.
Exactly. So the German Jewish tradition says, you know, whenever an aliyah ends with the name of Hashem, this is like a really important moment. And they have a slightly different tune, which goes up. Ruth did a great job of demonstrating it. The aliyah ends dramatically. Hi, name of God. And that's is supposed to be inspirational. It's supposed to give us a feeling after the aliyah ends. So that's interesting. So look at that. Yes, iPad Toronto also gave a private message to the chat to me. It also helps the reader. It's a lot easier for the reader to know where to end the aliyot and to know where to start the next aliyah if there's a word that's going to be ending multiple aliyot. So we have now discussed the last three aliyot, 5, 6, and 7. They end aliyot because they're the end of a section. And we saw 3 and 4, and they end aliyot because they end dramatically with the name of God. Okay, what about the second aliyah? Let's take a peek at the second aliyah. It looks like a slight pause in the story. Eliezer is going to go in the third aliyah and depart to go to find Rivka. I always imagined that was going to happen first thing in the morning, because in the olden days, that's when people went off to work, to travel. You'd always leave first thing in the morning. Second aliyah is sort of the end of the story where Avram asks Eliezer to swear. It's like a nice break in the action. So this should make our question much more serious for all of us. Aliyot 2, 5, 6, and 7 are at breaks in the story. It's like when you watch something on television, it's like the end of the scene, so let's go to commercial. And Aliyot 3 and 4 are these dramatic moments with the name of Hashem. That's where you sort of go to commercial on the dramatic moment, even if it's not the end of a subsection. And the first aliyah is awkward. We're in the middle of the story of Avraham burying Sarah and buying the field. We're like in the middle of the story, and he's taking the money out of his wallet, and we're seeing nice. Him take the money. You know, I'll even act it out. He's taking the money out of his wallet. He gives the money to Ephron, go to commercial, and then new aliyah, the field becomes Avraham's. So now I hope, even if you didn't think this was a valid question when we started, I hope by now you all are bought into the seriousness of this question, and we still need an answer. We have three answers, but we're looking
Rabbi,
for more.
First, there was a lot of negotiation, and you have a few words, Lifnei Bnei Chet, repeat itself. It's not a direct here bargain. A negotiation between Ephron and Avraham. No, it is much more populous involved in that. So there is a point here to show only by then, when he gives the money, then you have the final conclusion, what's happened. Well, this becomes really a detail of the actual bargaining and the agreement at the end, when it looks like 400 at the beginning, he wanted to give it for free almost. And Abraham does not agree to take something for free. That is portion number one, and I think it's a very important lesson for us to know how to deal.
So you're supporting our first answer that I sort of minimized the first answer that, why do you care about it?
It happened to be mine.
And so you're giving a little bit more oomph to that first answer. Okay, so I'm going to share another suggestion, which I read somewhere in an article. I think there's a fellow named Stuhlberg who wrote an article, and I think I read this in his article. So if it is his idea, I want to give him credit. And if it's not his idea, I want to apologize. And that suggestion is that the reason why this pasuk is quoted is for the ethical lesson. So Chaim has mentioned that this is important because it teaches us about business, which could be an important value of the Torah, but it also could be about the ethical lesson. What's the ethical lesson? So I mentioned to you that 400 shekel is a enormously large number at the time. Enormously large. $50,000, $100,000. Avram wanted to buy a field. There's no structure on the field. There's a cave in the field. Caves are not as valuable because you can't plant in the cave. It's not good for agriculture. Why is a cave costing $100,000? Not only that, the Torah stresses that when Avram gave the 400 silver coins, they were over la socher. I mean, there's some confusion about what the phrase over la socher means, but the general consensus is that it was either real silver, like 100% silver, and not mixed in with an alloy, weighed down with dross of some sort, or it was coinage, very good coinage. Avram had every opportunity to say to the person he was negotiating with, that price is too high. I'm going to offer you a smaller amount. Or what you sometimes see in a Middle Eastern, bazaar or shuk or something like that. You negotiate a price, you pay, and then you expect your change, and they don't give you the change. You have to say, can I get my change, please? Because they're trying to see if they can squeeze a little extra off of the deal. Or Avram could have said, man, he really overcharged me for the field. That really wasn't fair that he overcharged me. I am going to choose to pay him 400 silver dollars, but I'll give him the fake stuff or the weighed down silver or the slightly lesser quality silver. So perhaps this ends the Torah, ends the Aliyah, because we want everyone to understand the ethical lesson. The ethical lesson of when a Jew does business, even if you're negotiating a tough negotiation, once you strike a deal, you carry out the deal, you give fair coinage, you don't, after you strike the deal, you don't pay half of what you owe and then say, I'll pay the next in 3 weeks, right? You carry through what you promised. And maybe that's the reason why this ends the Aliyah, to suggest something ethical for us, for how we should live our Jewish lives. Now,
it emphasizes that dine mamonot are the first thing we should learn when we learn Gemara, when we teach our children Gemara.
So that's an interesting point. Some people like to learn with little kids. The first thing they like to learn is financial law. And the argument is that it's important for the little kids to learn that ethical value. And many years ago, I taught at a school, Yeshivas Or Vadas, and I learned Gemara with a kid who was just starting off Gemara, and they were learning Elul Metzias about returning lost objects. And like that suggestion to start teaching Gemara with the laws of returning lost objects, part of the theory behind that is, well, we want the kids to learn the importance of returning lost objects of Hashavat Aveda. So maybe, the Torah begins with this business deal, not like I was joking before, to teach Jews how to become good negotiators. Because after all, Avram was not a very good negotiator. He didn't get a good deal on this one. But instead, to learn an ethical approach to business. So that's our answer number four. To look at answer number five, I want us to look back at the psukim. I'm going to again restart the screen share, and then we'll look at another possibility for why the Aliyah ends where it does. I'm going to share the screen again. Okay. Let's look at what happens after the sale is done, and I'm going to read beginning from pasuk Yud Zion over here. Here's what the pasuk says here in pasuk Yud Zion. Vayakam stay Ephron, and Ephron's field, as we said before, had a raising of status. Oh, by the way, if you want to know which field it is, Asher b'Machpelah, it is the field in the area of Machpelah. Oh, and if you want to know where that is, Asher lifnei Mamre, it's in the area near Mamre. Oh, and if you want to know what was included was Hasadeh, the field. Oh, and by the way, Hame'ara Asher bo, also the cave. Oh, and by the way, in case you were wondering, V'chol ha'etz asher basadeh, all of the trees. Oh, and by the way, in case you were wondering, asher b'chol gvulo, in all of the boundary, saviv, all around. People don't notice this aliyah because it begins the next aliyah. People don't notice this pasuk because it begins the next aliyah instead of ending the first. But could you imagine a pasuk with that many details? It's almost as if the Torah knows that people will challenge our connection to Marat Machpelah and say that it's not up. It was this one. It was in Machpelah. It was near Mamre. And by the way, we bought the field and the cave and also the trees, which Avram is not interested in the trees, but the Torah tells us he got the trees too, in the entire boundary all around. And then we have a redundant pasuk. Because it repeats what we already know. Le Avraham, Avram bought it. I already know that he bought it because it said here that Avram bought it. So I already know that he bought it. But we repeat, Le Avraham, Avram bought it. Le Mikna, he bought it. Le Nebe'ed Ne'chet, before the B'nei Chet, the Hittites, B'chol Bo'ei Shari Ro, and everybody could see.
Rabbi.
I know you're
Rabbi.
emphasizing on each of these psukim the details, but I'm looking at it and saying it makes so much sense. Avraham is dealing in Eretz Canaan with the people that are not necessarily so honest. Avraham had his doubts, great doubts about Ephron and his honesty in dealing in business. So it makes sense that Avraham would delineate clearly all the parts that the Torah would specify, all these parts. And it's also begadol, a way to show, a business transaction, you have to be specific.
Debbie, I don't disagree. I see that there are at least three
Rabbi.
Debbies here. Hi, one second. Let me just reiterate Debbie's point. I think you're right, Debbie, that it's not so surprising that the Torah has to do it. It's just something that people don't always notice. It's a detail in the parsha that people don't always make a big deal about.
Agreed.
Rabbi, what I think is it stops in that pasuk, because the next pasuk, what you just described with all the details of the location of Marat HaMachpelah, is very important for the story with Yaakov when he is going to get married to Rachel. And he gives all the conditions. Rachel bitcha ktana. Even he does it, Lavan still is turning over to Leah.
So that's true. It does remind us of, in a few weeks, where Yaakov will marry Leah and Rachel, and then we have a similar circumstance of a negotiation. And in that case, not all the details are spelled out, or maybe they are all spelled out, and even though they're spelled out, we don't get the outcome that we want. So yeah, that's this pasuk, and it's we understand why it has to be spelled out. Okay, anyway, returning to reading these psukim. V'achareichein, and after all of this, kavar Abraham et Sarah ishto, Abraham finally buried Sarah, el marat Sdeah Machpelah, in that cave, al pnei Mamre, hi Hebron, by Mamre, which is near Hebron, be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. And then we repeat the same word, vayakam, this unusual word, which we had before, vayakam, we have it again. We repeat, vayakam asadeh, it had a rise in status, given that now it was going to be used for a, exalted purpose. Ve'amera, and the cave, asher bo, le'avraham lachuzat kaver, to be a grave, me'ed b'nei chet, from the Hittites. Okay, now, this brings us to a possible reason why the Aliyah ends where it ends. See, I've been claiming for 40 minutes that the Aliyah should end here, which is the end of the secular chapter, end of chapter 23, the end of the story of the burial of Sarah, and the end of the paragraph in the Torah. But does anyone spy anything in Pasuk Kaf which might make us reluctant to end an Aliyah with Pasuk Kaf?
It's Mechet. Why do you want to finish something with Mechet?
Yeah, isn't that such a lousy ending? From the
Hittite? They were trying to cheat him. So why should you finish with that?
I mean, not only that, but the whole Aliyah is a downer. It mentions that he was buying this for the purpose of being a kever, of being a grave. Well, that's a downer because, it's kind of sad to end an Aliyah and we're crying about Sarah's death. And by the way, that may be why the Aliyah doesn't end with 19 either, because 19 is the moment where Abraham buries Sarah. We're in tears. You don't want to end the Aliyah with something this sad. Everyone's going to be crying during all the Mishaberachs. The Gabbai won't be able to get a big donation because everyone's going to be sad. The Kiddush Club won't be able to go out to make Kiddush. They're going to be so depressed that Sarah died. We don't want to end there. According to the Gemara and Megillah, we can't end at here at 18 because there's a rule. You're not allowed to end an Aliyah too close to the end of the paragraph. So 18 is out. And look here at the English. Can anyone think why we can't end the Aliyah here at the end of 17? Look carefully at the English. And
it's not the end of the sentence.
The middle of a sentence. See here in the English, there's no period at the end of 17 and no capital at the start of 18. We're used in English to thinking that every sentence has to have a subject and a verb, but that's not true in the Torah. We have a number of sentences in the Torah which in English would not qualify as a number of psukim in the Torah that in English would not qualify as a sentence. In Parshat Shemot, you have a pasuk, Shimon Levi Viuda, Reuven Shimon Levi Viuda, four names. In English, that's not a valid sentence. In Varim, Parak Beis, Pasuk Yitzayin, you have a whole pasuk which is a subordinate clause. Va'ikar shetamu kol anshei ha'melachama lamut mikarav ha'am, and it happened as soon as everybody died. And that's the end of the pasuk. 17 and 18 are actually one English sentence. And the field of Ephron, which is in this place, and all of this thing, passed to Avraham as a purchase. And we go back, and then we have 16, which is the pasuk that actually ends the Aliyah. So it's possible that the reason why the Aliyah ends at 16 is because it would be too sad to end the Aliyah at 19 or 20. And we can't end it at 17 because it's the middle of a sentence. And so we choose 16 because it's just not sad. Why don't we end at 15? Well, how does 15 end? Et meitcha kavor, bury your dead. Well, we can't end the Aliyah there. How does 13 end? Vekbera et meiti shama, I will bury my dead there. How does 11 end? How does 11 end? Kvor meitecha, bury your dead. How does 9 end? Lachuzat kaver, as a grave. So it's amazing that when you look at this chapter of the Bible, almost every other pasuk pretty much ends with bury the dead. And we try not to end Aliyot with sad things. This is true across the Chumash. Whenever people die, we usually try not to end the Aliyah with people dying, even if it ends a paragraph or ends a story. And that may be a fifth reason why the Aliyah ends here, and that is we don't want to end with something sad. So I'm now going to add that to our chat where we've been writing down all of our reasons. This is reason number 5, not willing to end with a sad verse, burial and dead. That's
put
our
the conclusion that he, b'nei chet, which you drew our attention to, be to emphasize the fact that Abraham bought the kever legitimately from the Hittites, in contrast to David HaMelech, who acquired Bathsheba illegitimately from another Hittite.
That's interesting. I'll fill in the background for those who may not be familiar. Bathsheba is David's wife. We're going to read about her in the Haftarah this week. Bathsheba is David's wife, and Bathsheba, before she was married to David, she was married to another gentleman, Uriah the Hittite. The story of Uriah the Hittite is interesting as an aside, because according to the prevailing view in the Talmud, he divorced her before he went off to war. And, you know, sadly, in the last 12 months, we've actually heard discussion of this, of young men going out to battle on behalf of the Jewish people and divorcing their wives first, chas v'shalom, something should happen to them. Anyway, so she was married to Uriah the Hittite. He divorces her when he goes off to war, and she ends up marrying David. So it is an interesting parallel between the Hittites at the start of the Parsha and the Hittites at the end of the Parsha. And maybe that'll be a topic for next year's Parsha in Motion, Torah in Motion, Parsha Thursday night class. I don't know that that helps solve our issue of the Aliyah ending.
Rabbi, I want to suggest another idea. It's written twice by Yaakov. It's written twice. At the end, the last pasuk of the first portion, it's written by Yaakov when he gives him the money. The second time it's written by Yaakov when he does the actual burial. When he buries her, it's written again by Yaakov. You need that condition to be able, it's like You need to do something to be able to be a full Kenyan. So you have a Kenyan itself with the transferring the money. The other one is with actually burying her in taking the shovel or whatever it is in actually doing it.
So that is a very good point. I'm sorry, like an echo or something. That is a very good point. That the doubled Vayakom, which when we were reading the Psukim, I draw everyone's attention to the doubled Vayakom. And that's a super important observation, that it's repeated twice. Chaim's suggestion, which is given by other commentaries, is that the acquisition of Israel comes through two steps. The first step is when you receive legal title to it, which is what happens at the beginning when he pays for it. Or in a more modern parallel, when the United Nations determines that Israel should be a Jewish homeland. But to have the true Vayakom, to have the true acquiring of the land, you need to do something to make it yours. And it's the burial of Sarah that truly makes it Abraham's, and hence Vayakom the second time. So I think that that is a great explanation of the doubled Vayakom. But it still doesn't help solve our problem of the Aliyah ending.
It does.
I have a suggestion. Wait a minute, Chaim. I have a suggestion. Since you're focusing on, you don't want to end with death of the verse, you don't want to end with death. Instead of focusing on B'nai Chet, just focus on the word Kever. The verse ends with talking about a grave. So maybe that's the equivalent of ending a verse with mate or death. So you don't want to use that as the ending.
Yeah, I think that's part of what answer five is going to say. Like this answer five is saying somebody sat there with the entire chapter 23, said, where in chapter 23 can we end an aliyah? And if you actually do this, if you sit there on Shabbat and try to do it, you'll discover that there are very few verses that can end in Aliyah in chapter 23. Half of them end with saying, and you can't end in Aliyah with saying because, you're going to have a colon, like, what did they say? You can't end in Aliyah there. Half of them have like grave or death or burial. You can't end in Aliyah there. And process elimination ends up with this verse. So we started by saying, the verse was chosen because this verse itself is teaching us an important lesson. Now we're saying, well, maybe this verse isn't teaching us a lesson, but maybe the more general point is that we're a religion of life in Judaism, and the Torah is something which is supposed to be inspiring for us. So we didn't want to end an aliyah, which was sad. Remember that after you end an aliyah, you make a bracha. Blessed are you, Hashem, who gave us a Torah of truth. It's hard to say that, after Sarah passes away. And therefore, all the other Aliyah choices are rejected. And this is the one that ends up being chosen by process of elimination.
Why did you say that accepting that Sarah passed away, it's difficult? We say the bracha, Baruch Dayan Emet.
So I knew someone was going to say that. Maybe a lot of you are thinking that. And the truth is, in the Yemenite custom, the Aliyah does end with the burial of Sarah. Is there anybody here who attends a Yemenite synagogue or lanes in accordance with the Yemenite custom? Okay, I guess not. Yemenite custom does end the Aliyah with Sarah's death. And I think that's the problem with answer number five. Sarah lived 127 years. It's a lot of years. And as Rashi points out, she was enormously impactful in those 127 years. She accomplished a lot. She engaged in mitzvot. She stayed away from sin. And she died, which is a natural course of life. And then she was buried. Is that really such a sad thing? If somebody dies early, it would be a sad thing. Perhaps, you know, as Rashi says, Sarah died early because she hears about Akedat Yitzchak, and so she has a heart event of some sort, and then she dies. Maybe that's what happened here. It's sad because she died early. But someone could definitely say that the Aliyah could end at the end of the chapter with the burial of Sarah. So I give everybody an assignment, which is between now and Shabbat, to contact your rabbi. I'm also a rabbi. I'm a congregational rabbi. I should have introduced myself at the beginning. I'm sorry. My name is Yaakov Jaffe. I'm the rabbi of Maimonides Congregation in Brookline, Massachusetts, the congregation that was founded by Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik in the 1960s. We meet here in Brookline, Massachusetts. If anybody's ever in the Boston area, you're welcome to come. It's a wonderful davening, and we have good cholent too. But now that I introduced myself and I said that I'm a rabbi, I can now say you can all contact your rabbi between now and Shabbat and say you want to move the ending of this aliyah from where we in the non-Yemenite custom have it, and you want to adopt the Yemenite custom because we, according to answer five, we were sad. We didn't want to end the aliyah with something sad, as if we were fragile. We couldn't take ending with Sarah's death, but you can say to your rabbi that the Yemenites had it right. There's nothing wrong with ending there, and that it's a better place to end because it ends the story. So everyone can be deputized to raise a stink about this question over the course of the next 24 hours or so. Anyway, so those are the five answers that I anticipated for this question, and I think you suggested four out of the five, so that was good. But before we close, I want to hear if anybody has a sixth answer that I didn't anticipate, now that this question has been germinating in everybody's brain for the last hour or so, or if five answers is enough and everyone's sold on one of the five, we don't need any additional answers. Okay, sounds like five is enough. I really think that these five answers are important because to some extent, they are even asking us, what are we trying to get out of the Torah, right? One answer said, we're trying to get out of the Torah ethics, right? We're supposed to leave shul having heard the parsha, saying, I believe in ethical dealings. By the way, it wasn't just Abraham at the beginning. You have Eliezer who's negotiating with Lavan in the middle of the Parsha, and you have a similar thing there. So truth, keeping promises, ethics, it's through across the Parsha. Abraham buries Sarah, as we said. That's a commitment that he made with her, love that he has towards her. That's like one way to read the Parsha, one way to read what we're supposed to get out of the Torah, and one way to explain why the Aliyah ends there. Or is the parsha about Israel? You could say the whole parsha is about Israel too. It's about our acquisition of part of the land of Israel, Yitzchak's love of the land of Israel, that Eliezer has to go get the wife because Yitzchak can't leave Israel, that Avram is buried in Israel. So that's the second thing that the parsha could be about, that the Torah could be about, and that we're supposed to get out of it, the importance of Israel. Or is it about the vibes that on Shabbat we're supposed to feel an enriched Judaism? We're supposed to feel a positive connection in our Judaism. We're supposed to feel a lot of good energy. And we want the Aliyot to end in a good place because we want people to feel love of Torah, love of Yiddishkeit, love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why we chose to end here. So this question, which at first glance might have seemed like a really detailed technical question, goes to the core of what are the messages of the Parsha. The Aliyah ending magnifies and strengthens the key themes. And whatever the key theme is, you might see that in this mysterious Pasuk, the Pasuk that ends the first Aliyah of Parshat Chayei Sarah.
Wow.
Okay, I hope
But Rabbi,
yeah, go ahead.
We also say in our morning prayers, Mevarech al HaKol, which comes from Mevarech al HaTov v'Hara. Ending on a good note always goes against that. There should be times, even in the Torah service, where we acknowledge there's what we view as Tov v'Ra. And not always has to be ending on a good note, because that's not how life works. And if Torah is a Eitz Chaim, he, life, it's, we have to acknowledge that and even end on a bad note on Aliyah.
Yeah, so I, you know, iPad Toronto, I think that that is a great point that, you know, Torah in Motion should have a whole series devoted to that question, because, you know, Judaism has both parts, right? We have every morning we say that God is in charge of everything, good and bad. And, we, you know, at a funeral, they recite Diana Emet, you know, true judge, because God is God and God is true. At the same time, right, on Shabbat, we don't mourn on Shabbat. We don't do Nichum Avelim on Shabbat. Well, if it's really all part of God's plan and how God runs the world, then maybe we should do that on Shabbat. So these are great questions. You know, now probably not the time to do it, but a great topic for a whole other shiur. How do we put together the unwillingness, especially, you know, when we're talking about Aliyah endings, the unwillingness to end with these quote unquote, you know, sad moments? How do we connect that to, on the flip side, that God is behind everything? So that's a great other, you know, other question, you know, to do as well.
One last,
thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. One last question. Do you have any, or do any of us have any information about how they divided it up, the parshiot, and where they started and stopped aliyot for the triennial cycle?
I'll give you a short answer of this. Ruth, I am working on a lengthy monograph on this subject. So if you send me your email address in the chat, I can send you more information, you know, after we're done. The triennial cycle, we know where they ended parshas. I don't believe we have any evidence where they ended aliyot. But even our aliyah endings are less than 1,000 years old. And so what used to happen is there wasn't a standard ending of aliyot. The night before, they'd meet in shul, they'd go over the reading, and they would just decide who wanted to read how many verses and in what order. The idea of standardized endings is actually much more recent. And Ruth, if you send me your email, I'll send you more information about this offline.
I would like to make a point about the Yemenite custom, which is fantastic that you told us about. It corresponds to what Avraham Avinu said to Lot, Im hayamin ba'asma'ila. You've got yamin, Yemen, and small left, and the endings are metaphorically right and left.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's true. Okay. On that note, I thank everybody for coming, and hopefully gave everybody something to think about for Parshat Chayei Sarah. Shabbat Shalom to all. And I think next week's Parsha class, because of Thanksgiving, is a different time, but I think more information is on the Torah Motion website. About that, I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, Shabbat Shalom, and so great to study Torah with all of you.
Thank you. Da, da.
Thank you.
Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom.
Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom.
Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom.